G'day Swabbers, and welcome back to the Swab. This is the third series now, so you should be getting a little bit used to the new format. If you're not, lift your game. It is way better, in my opinion. It's snappier, it's more fun. There's enough time to be serious at the moment in hospital, so this is all about just having a bit of fun now on the Swab. This first part of the podcast is admissions. So this is where I tell you who we're going to admit today, and I make some admissions of my own. Our admission today, we have a cracker of an overachiever, I would say, from Metropolitan Victoria, and she has kids, she nurses kids, she's studying a PhD about kids, and she teaches people at the university about... It's a lot. She's a lot. She might only have been in the game since 2017, so that's, what, 5 or 6 years in the game, but they are COVID years. So one COVID year in nursing is the equivalent to about 40 years in the old world of nursing. Though she's about 160 years into nursing right now. I can't wait to speak to her after. Especially as being me, someone who's not mad for nursing the kids. Is she gonna loosen me up to maybe even trying that side of nursing? I like the oldies. I like them with little heads like raisins. They're my favourite. But we'll see. We'll get chatting to her later. Let's talk first of all about what's been going on in Georgie's world this week. So you might remember I was chatting with Molly about a gentleman who couldn't keep his rage in check. I was basically telling 50-year-old men just to hide the rage. And it turns out that as a 40-odd-year-old woman, I can also harbour a little bit of rage. My thing that got me raging this week was, so I'm part of my hill walking group, the Mermaids. If you remember the Mermaids, we call ourselves the Mermaids because we are pretty useless from the waist down, and we are quite attractive if you're a drunk sailor that's not seen women for a while. So that's kind of why we're called the Mermaids. Anyway, we're out walking on a hill that dogs are allowed. Now, I love dogs. I love them. And if you're out there and you love dogs too, which is most of you, I get it. I just don't have one because I don't like the shit. I don't like human shit. I could play in all day. I just don't care about it. Sometimes, I don't know if I'm meant to admit this, sometimes I don't hate the smell of it. I just find it an interesting one. Or, you know, just really looking about at them and, you know, can I have a look at yours after? If you're the next one you do, can you leave it in the bowl? I'm like the poo whisperer. It's part of nursing that I've always been really comfortable with. Human shit is not offensive to me at all. Dog shit, however, is the worst. I don't know what they put in a dog to make that come out of a dog. Horses poo, nice tidy little balls. Dog shit, it just makes me wretch. And not only that, dogs eat other dogs' poo. And it's just, I'm not having a dog until they invent one that doesn't have an arse, basically. So I like poo and I like dogs, but not together. I've got a few things like that. I like desserts and I like alcohol, but don't put alcohol in my desserts. It's weird. Anyway, I'm out on this hill walk, and more than I hate dog shit, I hate people who pick up the dog shit in a plastic bag and then leave it in the plastic bag. Surely that's worse. Surely you could just leave it for another dog to hoover up as it walks past. So when they tie it in a bag and then just leave it on the walk. We're doing this walk that's linear. You're just going one way, turning around and coming back, me and the mermaids. And we're having a good rage. And I said, I thought, you know what? Don't just be angry about it. Be the change you want to see in the world, right? So I got myself a long stick. And on the way back down the walk, I start hooking the dog shits on the stick and carrying it on my back like the Pied Piper or whatever. So, because I don't want to be near the dog shit. And literally, if you are in 400 kilometres of a dog poo, you can smell it. So I've got this long stick and I'm hooking them, and I'm getting more and more annoyed at the amount of shits I've had to pick up. And by the time I get to the bottom, there's this family coming through with a dog, a big dog. Now, they don't do that many shits. Big dogs do two, one in the morning, one at night. Little dogs do little ones all day. That's my theory. I don't know how true it is. But what they saw was a woman and her two old mates walking down a hill with a stick full of dog shits. And then as I passed them, I said, I don't even have a dog. To me, that's fairly obvious that I've picked up other people's dog shits, but my friends did point out to me later that they thought maybe it was us that had produced the bags of poo. I don't know. There's no need for me to shout at those people. But anyway, if you were those people, just know that I was doing good things in the world. It's not that me and the mermaids had been having turd festivals in the woods and then bringing them back. There you go. That was a hard start to this week's episode. We do have a break in a second before we come back and meet today's admission, Lucy Osborne. All right, it is time for the probe. Like I said, Lucy Osborne is in Metropolitan Victoria. She is currently on mat leave, so she shut her baby out, or maybe two, I don't know. Like I said, she's very high achieving. She shut her baby out probably in the last 6 months. She's got more kids on top of that. She teaches paediatrics in preparation for practice at Swinburne University, where she's doing her PhD. She's been nursing for 5 years. Welcome to the Swab, Lucy Osborne.
Thank you very much, Georgie. It's great to be here.
How many of the babies have you made now then?
It's actually only the one.
You've made the one. I thought you had made other ones that you might have done and not noticed. You've been very busy. Congratulations, mate. What did you make?
A little boy, and his name is Arthur.
Arthur. That's nice, isn't it? Was there any names that you considered that you look back on and you just think that would have been horrific? You know, like, there's no baby Roys anymore. There's no Keiths. Or certainly no. I would say Keith has carried on in other cultures, but there's no white baby Keiths anymore. Let's put it like that.
No, that's very true. And I also have the luxury working in a children's hospital that we do see like a variety of names for kids. So I know which ones are hip and happening, and they tend to be the ones that I like to steer away from. So I definitely had a very small list, and Arthur wasn't even on it in the end. So just happened.
But he just came out looking like a little old man.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes. That's cool. Go on. Are you allowed to dob in any names? I've got some if you haven't.
We get a lot of abstract or unique ones. You can't walk away from some of the really ridiculous ones like Abcity, which is just A, B, C, D, E.
You kind of think that one's an urban myth, but are you telling me that that actually happens?
It does. I even also looked after a couple of twins that were named after AstraZeneca, Astra and Zeneca, which, you know, I can't. It's just bizarre.
I wouldn't mind if it was the good vaccine, but it was the controversial vaccine that people thought killed them. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Oh, do you know, I had these two midwives on from England. If you haven't listened back to the earlier episodes of The Swab, a couple of Geordie midwives, and they'd had these twins pop out, and the parents from an African nation, and the first baby they'd named Excellence, and the second baby they'd named Peter. Is there a more sure sort of demonstration of how parents feel about the first child and then the second child?
That is such a child name.
What drew you to the kids, mate? Like, because for me, no. For me, absolutely no. Every patient is three patients. You've got the kid, and then you've got the mum and the dad, and then you've got the grandparent. It's just like they breed like gremlins, and yeah. And the kids under five, most of them, you're telling them what not to do that they want to do, or getting them to do something that they don't want to do. There's no peace in that job. What drew you there?
Well, I have always really liked working with kids growing up and things, but I think once I did my grad year in adult, I liked what I was doing, but I got frustrated that I didn't have enough time to work with the elderly more. I wanted more time. I wanted to be able to give them all of the time that they needed.
Yeah, because they do things very slowly as well.
Yeah, they do. So it was very frustrating for me. And I just...
Even falling over. Sometimes it can take about 4 minutes for a full fall to happen.
Yeah, that's very true.
Just come on, go. You can correct yourself. Go on. So you didn't mind working in adults, but yeah, you just felt it was a bit rammed.
Yeah, yeah. Unlike you, I was a little more averted to human poop. So babies and child poop.
I love it.
It was more of my style. So that's really all it was.
Do you know, nothing makes me happier than getting a difficult shit out of somebody. Nothing. You know, like when they've been backed up for days and I can be the one to crack it.
Yeah,
them.
No, I definitely can.
That's way better than getting a baby out.
I can definitely understand that. My first rotation was in a colorectal ward, so I do have a tiny bit of experience in that. But I just felt like something was missing, and it just was the playfulness of working with children. I can kind of be a little bit more myself with kids because I can be upbeat and fluffy and all of those things that if you do to elderly, it can be looked as condescending.
Well, yeah, but here's my... So I have done a little bit in kids. You know, when they send you relieving in kids, believe me, no one is relieved when I go working in kids. I just... The dose is... Nothing seems worth it when they're having 4 grams of Panadol or whatever. I just think, what's the point? Just give them a gram. You know, like the doses are so tiny. Anyway, so I have worked in kids now. I have noticed that it's cute and fluffy, to the point where you're sticking pins in them. And a lot of it is just lying to them, isn't it?
We like to think of it as redirection.
I saw one where they were one ward, and in adults this would be so unethical. So to cannulate so that their arms don't move, so a five-year-old, they said, put your arms out behind you like a superhero, and then they put a pillowcase over his arms and then laid him on the pillowcase with a hole cut in it where the cannula was going to be, so that he literally restrained himself. That's redirection. Is that what we're having as redirection?
So we tend to avoid physical restraining as much as possible. There are times and places where it's more appropriate for the child. We don't necessarily use things like pillowcases and sheets to wrap older kids because it can be a little bit more scary for them. We just tend to use parents and big bear hugs and then tuck the arm behind the parent's arm and
a headlock.
Nice. Yeah, but we use a lot of happy gas in kids, so a lot of nitrous oxide to make everything easier, and then they don't remember anything.
You can't really measure the nitrous oxide either, can you? I mean, like, if any the rest of you want to have a go, no one's going to really notice, are they?
No, exactly right. And it's a very common practice in Australian midwifery, actually, is, you know, dad, have a try of what the mum's taking.
Well, yeah, some of them could do with chilling out a bit.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's magic. And now, so you've had years of working with kids, right? And then you go nursing kids. And then you go have a kid. You were about as prepared to have a child as anyone could ever be.
To be fair, Arthur wasn't really planned, so less prepared in that kind of sense, but it was a super happy accident.
Yeah.
I think that I'm very good with sick kids. I'm less good with well kids because they're the ones that I'm like, all right, you're fine, go home, when I'm working in the emergency department. And as far as babies go, in my NICU, where I spend most of my time, those babies don't breathe on their own. So I don't know what to do with a breathing one, but I do.
Yeah, hopefully you got a breathing one. You know how you said he was a bit of a surprise for you? Perhaps if you'd spent a bit more time in adult nursing, you would have known how it happened.
And,
yes. Yeah, you know, I'm just saying we covered that in the adult nursing bit. Kids say the darndest things. What I was thinking with you having had a baby, because there's all these things you think you're going to do with a baby. Like, mine will never watch telly. Mine will only breastfeed. Mine will only this. Have you dicked yourself over with some of the promises you made yourself yet?
Not yet. I'm lucky that I've got four beautiful nieces and nephews. So I got to watch all of my brother and sisters say those things and then it not happen. So I came in a little bit more realistic with that. Arthur doesn't have an iPad yet, so I think we're winning with that.
And how old is he?
7 months.
And he doesn't have an iPad yet.
No.
Does he get bullied by the other babies?
Oh, he's a big boy. He bullies everyone else. He's very affectionate, loves a big kiss, and other babies don't like that, apparently.
My favourite things of babies, anything under one, is them bellies, them beautiful bellies. I know it sounds awful, but the organs are so near the surface. I don't know, like, you're just so near to them. They're just such beautiful things. They've stopped smelling perfect by 7 months as well, though, haven't they? They've started getting a little bit muddy every now and again. That's wonderful. So you got the whole of that ahead of you while studying a PhD. So you must have started that before you accidentally fell on a penis. Is that right?
Yes, the day before, actually.
The day before you fell on, you were just riding your bike out in the woods and you went, oh! Onto a penis, and then you got pregnant, and then you were one day into your PhD.
Yes, I was, and I had also just had my first COVID shot too. So all of the things that are like overwhelming as soon as I found out I was pregnant, I was like, oh no, what am I going to do? Because we weren't supposed to be getting our COVID shots at that stage when you were pregnant, so it was all a bit frightening.
Oh, but craggy, yeah, yeah. Oh well, I would have called it Pfizer when it came out then. Maybe
it was on the list.
Because we don't know everything about the jab yet. Is it just a coincidence that you don't, it was a surprise you got pregnant and you had the jab and then all of a sudden you're having a baby? Perhaps the jab has other side effects that we don't know about. Cool. So the thing I did enjoy when I was on the kids' wards was just the amount of crap they waffle. It is like they have been rehypnoled the whole time. And one of my favourite things to watch on TikTok is kids coming out of anaesthetic. Do you ever work in theatres?
Well, we do a lot of light sedations in the emergency department for things like broken bones and, you know, things like putting cannulas in and kids scared of needles. So we use a lot of nitrous and ketamine, especially. And ketamine is hysterical when they're coming out of that, depending on whether they've had a good or a bad dream.
I mean, you could slug a horse with ketamine. If you're out there and you're not nursey, ketamine, if you're not drug user yourself, because ketamine's out on the street now, isn't it? Like, all grown adults use this to get high. And also, it was a date rape drug for a long time, like a proper, like, kidnapping drug. And it's also used to sedate horses. And now we're using it on children. Good work. Good work, Lucy.
It's funny how the life cycle works with drugs like these. But honestly, I think the best one is nitrous, because the kid's never fully asleep with those and they can still talk and interact with you, but they don't necessarily remember what they're saying. So I have a beautiful story. It's one of my favorite parts of working with kids, and it's a thing that I like to tell people. I had a gorgeous 11-year-old boy with his mum who just needed just a little cannula in. So it was just going to be a quick in and out. And we had a beautiful relationship and we were teasing each other a bit, you know, like 11-year-old boys are, they're always up to mischief. And I said to him just before we gave him the nitrous mask, I was like, oh, I hope you don't have any secrets, mate. This gas will make you tell all of your secrets. And he looked at me with these big eyes and was just mortified at me. And
this is called redirection, people.
Yeah, absolutely. He was no longer scared of the needles, but he was certainly scared of the happy gas. And I said to him, oh, what's wrong? Are you nervous or something? And he's just like, oh, it's okay. So I asked mum if she could go and grab a bottle of water back in his room, because we were in the procedure room, which gave us about a minute to talk. And I said, oh, mate, what's wrong whilst your mum's not here? And he's like, oh, I do have a secret. I'm keeping a secret. And do you think I'll tell her? And I said to him, no, I was just kidding. You won't tell any secrets. And he's like, are you sure? Because I think I do need to tell someone soon. I was like, well, would you like to tell me? And he said, no, it's not that sort of secret. Okay, fine, whatever. So we just got on with it. Mum came back. I was getting everything ready to put the cannula in and we put the mask on. There was only oxygen, no nitrous going through it at this stage because we were nowhere near ready to start. And he turns to his mum and goes, Mum, I'm gay.
So we just kept going with the procedure.
And
I think it's beautiful. I'm hoping Mum felt it was beautiful.
She did. She had tears coming down her eyes and she said, I'm so thankful that you were ready to tell me. And I'm sorry that you had to be in the hospital to tell me, but just know that we love you no matter what.
Oh, man, that is beautiful. That could have gone so many different ways, that story.
Absolutely.
For a start, when you said he's got this secret, I'm like, shit, has he got stolen children in his cellar or something? That is so beautiful. And I'm so glad. Oh, right. That's great. Oh, you're kind of making me want to work with kids now, or at least lie to adults that every tablet I give them will make them tell the truth. You're making me want one or the other. Thank you so much for coming on. Are you happy to come back after the break? I have a couple of games for you to play. Are you all right for that, Liz?
I would love to.
Okay. I'll see you right after the break. Right, welcome back. So today's guest is Lucy Osborne, cracking stories from the world of paediatrics, a world I'm slowly warming up to now that I know that we get to drug kids and getting to tell us their secrets. Perhaps I need some nitrous at home. I've got a pair of teenagers who I'm never quite sure if they're telling me the truth or not. Lovely. We have the game section now, which we call the testing center. I don't even know what we call it.
Testing.
The game is called The Night Shift. Now, this centres on the fact that we all have to do night shift at some point. And how good your night shift is really depends on two things, your patient load and the people you're working with in the conversation. And so I'm just throwing out questions that you might want to bring up on night shift if you're with people who have no conversation game or will not shut the fuck up. So works either way. All right, so today's question, Lucy, do you get the idea? Do you still do nights? Please tell me. Well, you're on mat leave at the minute, but doing PhDs, teaching, having babies, and are you actually doing night shifts as well in all of this?
Not as many as most people, but I still would be doing maybe one or two a month.
Actually, this is a great question because you're working at the beginning end of life. So the question is, there's all things outside of typical, right? Most of us get to be typical. And then you got all things, loads of different diseases, loads of different syndromes. Okay, now, I've often wondered, would I rather be born with something or have 20 years of typical and then the difference kicks in? So it's almost like, would you rather be born with something or have 20 normal years, then have to adjust after. I reckon if I was born with something, I could just, I wouldn't know anything else.
I think I would agree to an extent, and especially in the world, the modern world, as we're changing to be a much more accepting community. I think being born a little bit abnormal or different and not knowing any different would be great. And, you know, with Arthur, my son, he would be so supported with whatever that I think that would be what I would choose, because it would be just me and I'd be really accepting of me. But that's coming from a life of experience. So.
Yeah, and we've got fairly typical lives, haven't we? Things have panned out how they were meant to pan out. All the organs work. They're all on the inside of the skin rather than the outside. So, yeah, I think I'm definitely with you, Lucy. I reckon I'd rather be born with it, like Maybelline, just born with it and have a... If you're in a supportive part of the world and in a supportive school and the rest of it, rather than sort of get to 25 and then all of a sudden wake up with an allergy to sunlight or whatever the weird thing is.
And honestly, I think adults are more mean than kids, and, you know, schools are more accepting than workplaces sometimes when it comes to disadvantages. So I think that's why I would rather.
Yeah, I've always made a point of making sure my kids are in state schools are more inclusive than private schools. So I've always gone state. All of them are good before you all start kicking off on the socials. Whatever you do with your kid is up to you. I'm just saying that, mind you, most of the privates around us are all boys' schools, and I'm pretty sure that my boys are going to be working for women most of their lives. All right, now we have the pressure cooker of the show, Lucy, if you don't mind. Now, you've not heard this game before because the episodes aren't out yet. This is, you know, the alphabet game, the traditional alphabet game. Give you a letter.
Yeah.
And then you've got, yeah, I know, yeah, you can blame it on baby brain or whatever. Or, well, you can't do that when you're doing your PhD. You just have to pass those modules. It's my attempt at finding the ultimate nurse. And what you're winning here, Lucy, is the respect of all the nurses in the world and your pick of any nursing job you ever want. And if you are overall winner of the seasons to come, then you can retire 10 years early at the end. All right, your letter is M for mother. And let's start the clock. Name something beginning with M that is addictive.
Meth.
Fairly addictive. Name of a medication.
Methylpred.
Part of the body.
Mouth.
Speciality.
Maternity.
Piece of hospital equipment.
Magnified? Oh, MRI.
An infection.
MRSA.
An illness.
Multiple sclerosis.
Antibiotic.
Pass.
Okay, a street drug.
Meth.
You're a one-horse drug person. Something you would find on a resource trolley.
Mask.
Oh, we could have a leader here. A nursing task.
Mouth care.
Okay, and something that smells bad. 5 seconds left.
Oh, Melina.
Melina. That's the only one I can think of.
Yeah.
Every week I want to put in something that smells good, but there is just nothing that smells good in a hospital. So that is amazing. Let's top up your scores, okay? You have 11 to beat or 7 to... obviously, if you get the lowest score over the season, you have to leave nursing. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Woo!
Look at her go! See, all the education you do really pays off. This is incredible. We have a new leader in Lucy Osborne. That's a relief. You won't have to leave nursing. Hard time to find a new job with a baby. So this is incredible. We have a new leader on the board, Lucy. Cool. So that is round up that part of the show. Thank you so much for coming along, Lucy. Is there anywhere that people need to follow you? Are you an influencer in any way? Are you selling a book? You've probably written a book.
I have not written a book yet, but I do have a little Instagram. I'm certainly not an influencer, but you can find me at Aussie_nurses. So that's Aussie_nurses, and Aussie is spelt with S's on Instagram.
Oh, that's cool. I've seen that one. So what's your message with Aussie nurses? What are you trying to get out there?
I just think that what I'm spreading is a little bit of positivity. So kindness from the bottom up with nursing is really influential at the moment. So it's been a little bit stagnant whilst I've been enjoying motherhood, but there's a little bit of education, a little bit of what I do every day, and a lot about how to find great people to network with and to connect with.
Oh, that's so cool. Thank you for coming on, Lucy. Go give Artie a little snuggle from me. Go and throw a big raspberry on his belly. thanks for coming, talking to us. And we'll follow you on your socials.
Thanks, Georgie. Talk soon.
And that is wrapping up the third episode in the third season of The Swab. Loving your Google reviews. We are top picks on Apple Podcasts. We are getting loads of great reviews. So thank you so much. If you do have time, hop on and give us a review. I don't know. It's dead easy. You do harder things at work, I'm sure. Bloody lovely to talk to Lucy Osborne today. She's having babies. She's looking after babies. She's doing PhDs. You can always do more. I'll speak to you in 10 years. Hopefully, we've not broken her by then. So anyway, guys, thank you so much for listening to The Swab. I'll see you next time.